Pretend the year is 1934, and you, being the baseball fan that you are, want to know how your team did yesterday. You can't just look it up with a smartphone in your pocket because there's no smartphone in your pocket. Instead, you turn to the sports page of your local newspaper. But in September of 1934, the Detroit Free Press did a lot more than report the scores. The paper took a stand. Reporter Noam Hassenfeld has our story.
Let's take a look at the standings. It's September 10th, 1934. With 20 games left in the season, the Detroit Tigers are 4 games up on the second-place New York Yankees. It sounds like a cushy lead, but remember, these are the Babe Ruth Yankees. Against these guys, a 4-game lead with 20 to play is anything but safe.
Tigers could win the pennant.
Documentary filmmaker and baseball superfan Aviva Kempner.
And they had not come in first since 1909.
The Tigers are riding the hot hitting of 23-year-old phenom Hank Greenberg. Playing in only his second full season in the bigs, Hank is batting .338, leading the league in doubles.
And I was probably the only batter in the lineup that was not in a slump.
That's audio from Aviva's documentary, The Life and Times of Hank Greenberg. Now, just hours before a crucial game against the Boston Red Sox, Hank sits alone in the clubhouse. He's perfectly healthy and enjoying the best season of his young career, but still something nags at him. Today is Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year.
He's a nice Jewish boy from New York, grew up Orthodox. And what is he going to do living in Detroit during this pennant race?
Jewish holidays aren't just family gatherings or celebrations. Instead, they come with a long list of ritual prohibitions. Traditionally, these include driving, writing, using electricity, but most importantly, working. And as much as baseball is a game, for Hank, it's his job. It's not an easy decision for Hank. He isn't personally very religious, but still, his tradition is important to him. But more than being about his own religious identity, this decision has even deeper implications. In 1930s America, being Jewish was very different than it is today. Neighborhoods barred Jews from buying homes, stores had signs which read, "No Jews or dogs allowed," and the 1924 Immigration Act had installed quotas which significantly slowed Jewish immigration to the U.S. And right in Hank's backyard,
Detroit was really the hotbed of domestic anti-Semitism.
Car magnate Henry Ford, perhaps the most famous Detroiter of that era, spent much of his spare time distributing anti-Semitic propaganda. His newspaper, the Dearborn Independent, went so far as to call Jews, quote, the world's foremost problem.
But more importantly, there was Father Charles Coughlin,
a Catholic priest in Detroit who used his radio program to spread anti-Semitic messages to an estimated 30 million weekly listeners.
We are Christian insofar as we believe in Christ's principle of love your neighbor as yourself. And with that principle, I challenge every Jew in this nation to tell me that he does not believe in it.
And Hank experienced this anti-Semitism up close. Here's his son, Steve.
They were calling him every name in the book. Sheenie, kike, throw him a pork chop, he can't hit that.
Hank was worried that choosing to sit on Rosh Hashanah might inspire even more vitriol. But a curious thing happened. The city's major paper, the Detroit Free Press, rallied behind him. The day before Rosh Hashanah, at the top of the sports section was a headline written from right to left in strange, large letters. It read, L'shana tova tikatevu.
In Hebrew letters, front page, it was as if war had been declared. The type was that big.
An English headline right next to the Hebrew read, "And so to you, Mr. Greenberg, Tigers fans say L'shana tova tikatevu," which means Happy New Year. According to Jonathan Sarna, professor of American Jewish history at Brandeis University, this may be the only instance of a major American newspaper with a Hebrew headline. And think about what it took to make this a reality. This was before digital printing, so the Free Press would have had to get special metal plates just to print these 3 words.
I have no idea to this day where they got the metal type for this Hebrew.
And immediately below the Hebrew headline, there was a huge picture of Hank mid-swing. It was almost as if the paper was saying, "Please, Hank, we need you." Okay, back to where we started. It's late afternoon on Rosh Hashanah, and Hank is sitting in the Tigers clubhouse in his street clothes. He actually came here straight from synagogue. He looks up and spots Coach Mickey Cochran, who tells him this, "I need you out there, but in the end, it's your choice." Hank decides to play. As the game gets underway, congregants at the synagogue are on the edge of their seats. Here's Tigers fan Harold Allen.
While the tenor was singing, he was stopped for a minute and says, "How's Hank doing?" The whole interest of the city of Detroit was Hank Greenberg.
The Tigers are in a nail-biter against the Boston Red Sox. They trail 1-0 for most of the game, but Hank is the lone bright spot for Detroit, tying things up with a solo homer in the seventh. Now, in a 1-1 game, he calmly strolls out of the dugout to lead off the bottom of the ninth. Hank digs in while Red Sox pitcher Gordon Rhodes peers in for the sign. The crowd grows into a steady roar as Rhodes winds up and fires. Hank's bat whips through the zone and the ball rockets up and out of the park. A walk-off home run from the Hebrew Hammer as the Tigers win 2-1. The next day, a picture of Hank mid-home run trot graces the sports section once again. This time, the headline reads, "A Happy New Year for Everybody." So, happy ending for Hank and the Tigers, right? Well, the thing is, there are a whole bunch of Jewish holidays in the fall, so Hank's story isn't done yet. Up next, the most important one of all, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. Over the next week, Detroit fans waited on pins and needles to see if Hank would play. And believe it or not, the best place for fans to find out if Jewish law might allow him to was, of all places, the sports page of the Detroit Free Press.
And all the newspapers in the city were debating, would the power hitter play or not?
Jewish ritual practices weren't exactly the kinds of things most people knew about. But before Detroiters knew what hit them, technicalities of Jewish law were being expounded in the sports page. The most important question to answer, was it kosher that Hank had played on Rosh Hashanah? As Hank's son Steve says, one rabbi
decreed that Hank Greenberg could play on Rosh Hashanah because he found an obscure text in the Talmud that said that on Rosh Hashanah, the children played in the streets of Jerusalem.
And looking back on Hank's two Rosh Hashanah home runs, the famed writer Iffy the Dopester, not Jewish as far as I know, issued his verdict in the pages of the Free Press, writing this: "I do not know anything about the law of the most ancient church in the world. That's all for students of the Talmud. But I'm here to testify in the world as a baseball expert that the two hits he made in that ballgame were strictly kosher." Let's not take for granted the basic fact that a major American newspaper in the 1930s was debating intricacies of Jewish law. In a place famous for its anti-Semitism, it showed just how much Hank was respected throughout Detroit. But at the same time, some were less than thrilled with Hank's decision. That rabbi who said Jews were playing in the streets on Rosh Hashanah? Well, according to Jewish historian Irwin Cohen, it's more complicated than that.
He came out very upset after that, that he was misquoted.
Cohen says that Rabbi Thuman did say Jews had played ball, but he meant children, so it wouldn't apply to adults. And he says that according to Jewish law, it would be very difficult to permit playing in a professional baseball game on Rosh Hashanah.
He was a very Orthodox man, long white beard, dressed in black. He's from a long line of Orthodox families. Rabbi Thuman did not give Hank Greenberg permission to play in Rosh Hashanah.
Hank received phone calls and telegrams from rabbis and Orthodox Jews who felt that he had given up on his religion. People who claimed he'd make it harder for Jews to stay true to their faith in the future. To this part of the Jewish community, Hank represented a very real fear, the loss of traditional Jewish life. Hank seemed like someone who, when push came to shove, would choose his livelihood over his religion. 8 days after Rosh Hashanah, with the Tigers leading the Yankees by 7.5 games on Yom Kippur, Tigers fans were anxiously awaiting Hank's decision. He'd played on the Jewish New Year, but would he play on the most solemn day in the Jewish calendar? For Hank, religion was complicated. The week before, when he'd been asked to lead a prayer, he said, "I'm only a ball player. Give it to someone else who really deserves it." But still, when it came to Yom Kippur,
Hank Greenberg decided to honor his Romanian-born parents by trekking to the synagogue instead of suiting up during this raging pennant race.
The only way I would ever think that I might have been a hero in those days was the day I walked into Sherazadeh Temple on Yom Kippur. The four rabbis standing on the podium, davening, praying, and
Suddenly I walk in and everybody in the congregation gets up and gives me, and the poor rabbi looks around, he doesn't know what's happening, and I'm as embarrassed as can be because it's all totally unexpected.
Greenberg was out yesterday observing Yom Kippur, and I believe undoubtedly Hank's big bat was missed out here yesterday.
With Hank sitting out, the Tigers lost. But once again, the Detroit Free Press didn't waver. They published a poem from Edgar Guest. Here's Hank's son, Steve.
And it said, "We shall miss him in the infield, we shall miss him at the bat, but he's true to his religion, and we honor him for that."
Think about that newspaper, with those three Hebrew words, Lishana Tova Tikatevu, emblazoned on the sports page. Then take a second to think about when and where this was happening, a time when Jews were viewed as a threat to America. And for some, they still are.
Jews will not replace us! Jews will not replace us!
Let's be real clear. Hank Greenberg did not play on Yom Kippur in 34 as Hitler was rising in Europe. And that's what made it even more powerful. And after what happened in Charlottesville, I hope some more Jewish baseball players don't play on Yom Kippur.
Since Hank did it, great Jewish players like Sandy Koufax and Sean Green have also chosen to sit out on Yom Kippur. But this ability to take a stand depends on the press. In 1934, the Detroit Free Press truly had the power to frame Hank's decision, and it didn't choose to present Hank as some sort of radical outsider with a strange and inscrutable religion. Instead, the Free Press portrayed Hank's decision with the complexity it deserved, describing the real conflict of identity that Hank, and to be honest, many Jews felt at the time.
I think the newspapers, just like today, played a very important role in saying anti-Semitism, racism do not belong on the ball field, do not belong in society. And the fact of the matter is, the way the Free Press covered, will Hank play on Rosh Hashanah, was again the power of the press saying it's okay for a player to make a stand.
That's filmmaker Aviva Kempner speaking with reporter Noam Hassenfeld, and her documentary is called The Life and Times of Hank Greenberg. You're listening to Only a Game from NPR.